Today is the 25th anniversary of 9/11, and I'm so honored to have Caitlin and Shane Bugnowski on the Community Campfire. They are both veterans, incredible members of this community, and they love baseball. Their three boys play the game, and Shane coaches my son's team, which is how I got to know them. So this is truly a gift that they are both here with us today to share their experiences of serving after 9/11 and how we can all talk to the younger generation about this important day and so that we never forget. Here is my conversation with Caitlin and Shane Bugnowski. So I just learned how old you are.
I let that slip.
So I'm like doing the math. Your age minus 25. How old were you when 9/11 happened?
Yeah. I had just been dropped off at school to go to college, so I was 18.
Okay, yeah. And you, Shane?
I was 19. I was a sophomore at West Point when it happened, yeah.
Okay. And what do you, I mean, we all talk about where we were, and do you want to talk a little bit about where you were and what was your day like that day?
So my parents had dropped me off maybe a week prior, and I was down at Wake Forest in North Carolina, and I was doing ROTC. But I had just gotten there. I don't even think I'd had a single ROTC class yet. Really good family friends of ours who we had known since I was 18 months old. Both of our dads had been in the Army for a really long time, and he was a senior at Wake when I was a freshman. And so I woke up that morning not knowing, you know, anything. And he called me and he was like, turn on the news. And so I turned it on. And at the time, my dad was actually stationed at the Pentagon. And what I didn't know was just he happened to not be there that day. They were getting ready to move in a week. And so in the Army, when you're getting ready to move, it's called outprocessing. So he was at a different Army post in that area doing all the outprocessing stuff because obviously all the phones were down and everything. So it took me, I think it was later that night before I finally got a hold of either him or my mom, in a weird twist, where they were moving in a week was to Saudi Arabia. So
did they still move in a week?
They did.
I mean, your father's kind of a big deal. Let's be honest.
Yeah, so he, at the time, we were actually just talking about this the other night with the boys. He was either a one or a two-star general at the time. Right. Yeah, ended up being in the military 41 years, finished his career as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs under President Obama. You know, I was an 18-year-old kid and in college, and it was pretty wild.
That is huge. What about you, Shane? What was your day like?
Yeah, so I was at West Point. I was a sophomore. You know, we kind of started class normal that day. And at one point, you know, one of the professors turned on the TV and we started seeing it all roll in. And of course, it distracted the whole, you know, everybody was kind of out of class and watching the TVs. And actually, the instructors kind of made a decision to turn the TVs off. So we kind of went into a black hole for a few hours. But it was a interesting transition. You know, when I joined West Point, I was, you know, in a lot of reasons excited about the education and the leadership, but didn't seem imminent that we were going to war anytime soon. And I think within a few days, collectively, we started to realize like, hey, this is our post-graduation experience is going to be a lot different than maybe what we thought. We, you know, Afghanistan would launch a few months later, Iraq shortly thereafter. And then we were in multi-theater wars for, you know, the better part of the next two decades. And so really the ground shifted under, I think, certainly under our feet and wasn't what we expected when we started the West Point jersey, for sure.
When you graduate from West Point without 9/11 happening, what typically happens?
Yeah, so West Point, you incur a five-year obligation as soon as you graduate, or you usually get a few weeks of leave on en route, but you'll typically go to sort of officer basic training to learn some of the specialty skills you'll use in the Army. But then you get assigned to a military unit and you spend usually about the next 4.5 to 5 years with that unit. And my class was the class that was sophomores when it happened. And so that day took on kind of a special meaning because we knew at this point Afghanistan was rolling. And so we knew we were heading where we were heading.
You know, when Shane and I graduated and eventually met and got married, and we were deployed pretty much all the time.
That was my next question. Where did you meet?
Yeah, so we both started service in the Army in different locations. I got reassigned after my first deployment to Fort Hood, where she was stationed. And so sort of met through a friend, a West Point classmate of mine who was in her unit. So that was kind of what brought us together. But she actually picked me up in a bar.
In Austin, Texas.
In Austin, Texas.
Good job.
That's true. Yeah, you got to go for it. So we had both just gotten back from Iraq when we met. And then then maybe 6 months later, Shane moved to Georgia for what's called the Captain's Career Course. And it's kind of the next schooling that you do as you're getting promoted. And then ultimately, he was selected for Special Forces and so went to Fort Bragg to do that, to become a Green Beret. And meanwhile, I deployed to Afghanistan for 15 months.
What did you do there?
I was an engineer officer. So we were the only construction engineer unit in the whole country for the full 15 months. So we had both horizontal and vertical construction units. So we were building roads, repairing roads, building some of the outposts and fobs that soldiers were living on. It was a long time, though. It was during that surge period where I'm sure there's some validity to it's hard when there's that period of transition between units over there. So when a unit's there and then another unit comes in to take their place. And I think the thought was that we were losing ground during that transition. So should we extend the deployment time to reduce some of that loss? But it was a long time. And while we were there, all the other units got shortened down to 9 or 12 months, and we were still there for 15. So, which was hard mentally to see people come, see people leave, see people come, see people leave,
wow.
And you're just still there.
Wow. So you're a Green Beret, which is like, huh, whatever. No big deal. You're obviously a big deal, too. I mean, clearly. No, you're a Green Beret. That's just like, it's just one of those things where you're just sitting next to somebody, and you just never know who you're sitting next to and what they could do to you if you act out. Kidding, of course. So tell me how many tours you did.
So initially, I did a deployment to Iraq, which was a longer trip, probably similar, like 14-ish months. And then after, most of my deployments were much shorter, but more frequent. But yeah, I would probably say something like 8 deployments, maybe.
So unless you come from a family in the military and you're around it a lot, it's not something that people automatically think to do. How do you feel about the next generation of service members and how to instill the value of service?
It's interesting because Shane and I had very different upbringings, right? So me going into the Army probably seems less shocking to people, given that my dad had been in forever. My brother and sister both went to West Point. And I give my dad a lot of credit and all the people that we got to interact with growing up because of him, because I think that's why we all chose to go into the military. I really love the community, the sense of purpose, the selfless service that you saw every day. You know, to be honest, we joke that I'm the black sheep of the family because I'm the only non-West Pointer. But I think it surprised my parents when I wanted to do ROTC. But I had loved growing up in that environment. And so that's why I wanted to go. And my niece right now is in her freshman year at West Point, which is amazing. It's hard. You're giving up a lot of your life, you know? So, but I think what's important is that kids know that that is a way that they can make a difference, right? There's a lot of ways you can make a difference in the world, and by no means is the military the only important one, but it is a way that, you know, you can serve your country and do it for the right reasons.
So when I made the decision to go to West Point, I think there were a lot of people in my, you know, family and community that were like, wait, West Point? They were super supportive, and they've had my back through the whole process and everything. I wasn't the kid that everybody was like, oh, he's going to West Point. It kind of, and then that journey of 9/11 happening, because it kind of went from, hey, it's a really good leadership school and it's a great education. It's, and oh, by the way, there's this service component of it. You know, as an 18-year-old kid, I knew and I understood that there was a service commitment and that there was this burden of leadership that would come after, but I don't think the gravity of it had really set in until 9/11. And it was an interesting couple months for me, really starting to think through like, hey, I'm not just going to be some random platoon leader. Like, I'm going to be in Iraq or Afghanistan, like leading soldiers. And so I think I got a lot more mature really quickly after 9/11 personally, because I think the gravity of that, the what was about to occur started to set in. My personal story. So I graduated West Point. I went to an artillery school to learn to be an artillery leader in the Army. I joke I was probably the Army's worst artilleryman because I never did the job ever. Right after artillery school, I went to Ranger school, finished Ranger school, moved to my first duty station, and within about 10 days, I was on a plane to Baghdad. And, you know, to put in perspective how quickly it accelerates, I landed in Baghdad probably 2 or 3 in the afternoon, got put in a leadership role, basically overseeing a scout platoon that evening, and we left on a 4-day mission at about 11 o'clock that night. We got into a firefight at about 2 in the morning that first night. So that was literally like my first day on the job. And that story is not uncommon. We were pushing units into those zones as quickly as we could to support combat operations. And there were a lot of young leaders that got put to the test really quickly. And it was a challenging time.
But it is kind of wild to think back to, you know, both of us separately, but at 22 years old and you're over in Iraq and you're, you know, given 18-year-old kids and, you know, 40-something-year-old platoon sergeants, and you're in charge of that whole crew. I think about my kids now, and I'm like, gosh, that's really young.
I mean, I'm like, can you make your own lunch? That's really what I'm asking.
Can you just clean up your room? Yeah.
You have such a, you know, interesting relationship, special relationship with service, the service members, military. And 9/11 rolls around, and it's like this huge thing. And I, you know, at first when my kids were really young, I want to cry. I was like, how am I going to explain this craziness, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just wonder, like, how you explain it to them.
It's hard. We were actually just talking about it last night with the boys, and it is hard because no matter what we tell them, they're not going to feel the emotion that we feel because they didn't live through it, right? It's something that they'll read about in their history books. And sure, I think our boys have a little bit more of a tangible sense for what it means for someone to lose their life in that capacity, right? Like, our youngest is named after one of Shane's best friends, who was a helicopter pilot in the Army and died. But I do think you can have those conversations, and you can talk about the incredible stories that came out of that day, from the firefighters to the just civilians that chose to put themselves in danger and lose their lives to save others. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty special thing to know that people in the world are willing to do something like that for someone they don't even know.
I think the biggest thing is just being able to have those conversations, right? I think they can be sometimes uncomfortable or awkward, or maybe it's you miss the mark. But I think if you take the time to actually unpack and explain the details of it, it provides a unique perspective. And so I think we've done an okay job with our boys, trying to at least give them some frame of reference and some context to it. Because there, you know, it comes with, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. There's a lot of unbelievable things that happened in the aftermath of 9/11. I mean, there was certainly no time in my life where we as a country were more unified, and the political divide was almost non-existent for a couple of years.
Isn't that really the truth? Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, a far cry from where we are now. But there's also a real loss and real difficulties, and we as a country didn't do everything perfectly. And that's, I think we got to give our leaders grace a lot of times, because it was a hard time. Being able to raise your kids in a healthy, safe community is a blessing. And
I really appreciate your time.
Thanks
and your service.
Us.
Like, I always want to know, you see people in uniform, and do you say thank you for your service? Like, strangers?
For sure. Yes.
It's not weird, right?
People may seem uncomfortable, but I promise you they appreciate hearing it. Yeah.
Well, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
To both of you.